And in the next hour, we'll be continuing our coverage of former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds, his contribution to the country we all now live in. He served as Taoiseach twice in leading coalition governments in the 1990s. Guests in the next hour will be include the former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin, and Gerry Adams, president of Sinn Féin. The former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds passed away in the early hours of this morning after a long illness.
The time now is 8 o'clock on Thursday the 21st of August on RT Radio 1. You're listening to Morning Ireland with Christopher McKevitt and Cathal McCullough.
The headlines: tributes have been paid to the former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds, who died in the early hours of this morning. In Britain, police and intelligence services are stepping up their efforts to identify the apparently British Islamist militant who killed the journalist James Foley. And commuters have been making alternative travel arrangements in advance of the rail strike on Sunday and Monday. The news in full from Brian Jennings.
The former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds has died. He was 81. Born in Rooski in County Roscommon, Mr. Reynolds became a successful businessman and politician. He served as a minister in several government departments and was twice elected Taoiseach. He played an integral part in the early years of the Northern Ireland peace process. He died in the early hours of this morning following a long illness. Mr. Reynolds is survived by his wife Kathleen and seven children. Sinead Morris reports.
Albert Reynolds came to power in 1992 on the resignation of Charlie Haughey. He had a background in the showband business and a reputation for pragmatism and deal-making. Albert Reynolds surprised even those close to him by making peace in Northern Ireland a top priority. In time, the IRA ceasefire would come to be his greatest achievement, as well as his success in negotiating a multi-billion euro deal for Ireland at a European summit. The first government he led collapsed after tensions with his coalition partners, the Progressive Democrats, first over the X case and then over the fallout from a tribunal into the beef industry. The subsequent election was disastrous for Fianna Fáil. However, a fresh coalition with Labour emerged. But within months of the triumph of the ceasefire, Labour withdrew from government after a complex controversy involving the paedophile priest Brendan Smith and the office of the Attorney General. As he left office, Albert Reynolds observed that in politics, it's the little things that trip you up in the end.
Fergus Finlay, who was an advisor to the former Taoiseach the Dick Spring, worked closely with Mr. Reynolds in government in the 1990s. On this programme, Mr. Finlay paid tribute to the achievements of Mr. Reynolds and spoke of the close working relationship he forged with the then British Prime Minister John Major in the early years of the Northern Ireland peace process.
John Major was, in some respects, a reluctant partner who had to be dragged kind of kicking and screaming into this process. And it is to Albert Reynolds' eternal credit that he won him over. He was the most dogged, the most persistent, the most straightforward, the most single-minded person I think I've ever met in terms of the pursuit of an objective.
Also on this programme, the former Fianna Fáil Minister Mary O'Rourke described Mr. Reynolds as a very strong election candidate and person.
I remember him for his devotion to Kathleen, Kathleen to him, his family, how much they meant to him. And for me, that was such a sterling quality in a busy, busy person, in the old-fashioned way. God be good to him and to his family now.
In other news, the White House has said that US Special Forces launched a secret mission earlier this year to try to rescue American hostages held in Syria, including the journalist James Foley, who was killed by Islamic State militants. A Pentagon spokesman said the mission failed because the troops couldn't find Mr. Foley or other hostages and pulled out of Syria after a gun battle with Islamic State fighters. In Britain, police and intelligence services are stepping up their efforts to identify the apparently British Islamist militant who carried out the killing. A video of the killing that was posted online has provoked outrage internationally. Richard Barrett, a former head of UK counter-terrorism at the secret intelligence service MI6, said he believed that Mr. Foley's killer would not evade capture.
Sooner or later, he's going to be vulnerable, I would have thought, to arrest or some sort of interdiction and then brought before the court. You know, I don't think that anybody is prepared to forget this sort of crime, and therefore the long arm of justice, if such a thing exists even in Syria, will eventually catch him.
A Department of Foreign Affairs official said that around 30 Irish citizens had gone to fight in Syria and Iraq. Holidaymakers, sports fans and commuters have been making alternative travel arrangements in advance of the stoppage of train services on Sunday and Monday because of a strike. The industrial action is being taken by members of the National Bus and Rail Union in a dispute over temporary pay cuts. The strike coincides with the holding of the All-Ireland Senior Football semi-final between Kerry and Mayo at Croke Park. Further strikes are planned next month on the days of the Senior Football and Hurling All-Irelands. ISME, the Irish Small and Medium Enterprises Association, has called on the government to bring in a law that would make it illegal for workers in public utilities and essential services to strike. Now the time is coming up to 6 minutes past eight.
Valerie Cox is here with the rest of It Says in the Papers.
Thank you very much, Christopher. Well, of course, as reporters, we all remember covering all the issues surrounding Albert Reynolds. And I do remember as a fairly young reporter in the late 80s, early 90s, out on the hustings with Albert Reynolds. And one of the things that I think we'll always remember is the fact it was a different world. There were no mobile phones then. And Albert would look around the crowd following him and he would key in on your face, he'd hone in on your face and he'd remember everybody who was there. And the other thing I'll always remember is his very firm handshake. He'd take your hand, he'd put his other hand over it and he'd look at your face and he'd say, you're very welcome. So today, on this very sad day, Ar Dheisteanna Gurbh a Hanam Dhileash. And in the papers this morning, Gardaí tracking 30 Irish jihadi fighters. That's the lead this morning for the Irish Independent, where Tom Brady, Shane Phelan and Tim Warden compile a report that 30 jihadi fighters are using Ireland as a base while travelling regularly to conflict zones in Syria and Iraq. That's according to Gardaí intelligence. It says the group is being kept under close surveillance by Gardaí here and also under watch abroad by international police agencies. And inside the paper, Shane Phelan writes about a fighter who claims to be half Irish, half Nigerian and who has been using social media to advise potential recruits. Also on the front of the Independent, Niall O'Connor reports that the head of debt-laden Irish Rail has come under fire after it emerged that he is on holiday in Mauritius as unions prepare to bring the rail network to a halt. The paper said it has confirmed that David Franks won't return to Ireland until Monday, during the middle of the second day of planned industrial action involving over 2,000 train workers. That story makes a lead for the Irish Daily Mail with rail strike, you say? Ah, well, life's a beach. Rory Giblin reporting that Mr. Franks has decided to go ahead with his 10-day break despite receiving official strike notification from the National Bus and Rail Workers Union on August 1st, almost 2 weeks before he went to Mauritius. But one man who has already abandoned his family holiday and returned to Downing Street is UK Prime Minister David Cameron. UK intelligence agencies are seeking the identity of the masked man with an English accent who was filmed beheading US journalist James Foley in Syria, writes Mark Hennessy in the Irish Times. And Mr. Cameron returned for talks with his foreign secretary and intelligence and military officers. The Irish Examiner leads with a report that suicide tourism is on the rise, with a number of people travelling to Switzerland to take their own lives, doubling in 4 years. Catherine Shanahan says two people from Ireland feature among the growing number of suicide tourists who take advantage of Right to Die organisations which assist people in taking their own lives. And that's according to a report published in the Journal of Medical Ethics. The Irish Daily Mirror, the Irish Sun and the Irish Daily Star all lead with the killing of Andy Connors, while the Herald says a woman has been arrested over the murder of Alan Ryan. In other stories, Trump on collision course over Doonbeg turbine plan, says The Independent. Charlie Weston reporting that the lodging of fresh plans with Clare County Council follows Mr. Trump declaring in May that the council had killed the prospect of wind turbines being erected near Doonbeg. Yesterday, the executive vice president at the Trump Organisation said if we conclude that it jeopardises our investment at Doonbeg, We will do whatever is necessary to fight it and protect the beauty of our site. We have a very good track record of fighting these monstrosities. Meanwhile, Anne Lucy reports in The Times that a perceived risk to the recently introduced white-tailed sea eagle is one of the main reasons cited by On Board Planola for turning down a proposed wind farm in the Kerry-Cork border area near Kilgarvan. And finally, Alison Healy is reporting from the Virginia Show in County Cavan, where the prima donnas of the bovine world were being primped for the Diageo Bailey's Champion Dairy Cow of the Year contest. The dressing rooms at the Miss World contest wouldn't compete with the preparations for this, she says. Clip-on tail extensions were hanging on a rail, hair dryers were going at full throttle, and beauty parlour smells hung in the air. But in a vote of confidence for all mature ladies, the contest was won by the oldest cow, Dale Valley J. Lulu. Her owner, Cork man Sean Murphy, said the 9-year-old had 7 calves to her credit, and she's the queen bee.
8:20 on Morning Ireland, our continuing coverage on the sad passing of Albert Reynolds, former Taoiseach, after a lengthy illness. We're joined on the line by the Fianna Fáil leader, Micheál Martin. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, Albert Reynolds's life and times in politics are really almost a generation ago. How do you set his legacy in a contemporary context?
Well, could I first of all just on my own behalf and on behalf of the Fianna Fáil Party extend our sincere sympathies to Albert's wife Kathleen and to his entire family who sustained him throughout a fantastic and very effective and enduring political career, which of course the enduring legacy of which is bringing and assisting and bringing peace to the island of Ireland. And I think hopefully the family will be consoled by that extraordinary legacy, which many perhaps younger people in contemporary Ireland may not recall in terms of my youth, the incredible violence and the daily violence in Northern Ireland that was part of our lives. Albert Reynolds was key to bringing that an end in terms of his work with John Major and others in the Downing Street Declaration, which led to the IRA ceasefire. That legacy of peace and the capacity to broker peace, I think, will be an enduring legacy, and in terms of contemporary Ireland, still obviously has ramifications to the present day.
It's a legacy that we also ascribe to his successor, Bertie Ahern, that peace building in Northern Ireland. Perhaps fair to say they both played a huge role. Albert Reynolds, of course, wasn't in office at the time when many of the fruits of that were being realised.
That is correct. I mean, the entire process was a long one, but did require the kind of single-mindedness and determination that Albert Reynolds brought to it, and indeed Bertie Ahern brought to it subsequently. I mean, both had that single-mindedness to bring this to realisation. And I think, as other speakers said earlier on your programme, there weren't too many around at the time who believed it could happen. There were many, many cynics at the time who felt he was going down the wrong route and felt that he was being overly optimistic. But I think the key was the development of a very strong relationship, personal relationship with John Major at the time. And the trust that developed between the two of them, I think, was instrumental in bringing the British-Irish governmental approach to the issue.
And I believe
it was key also in terms of his reaching out to both the Republican movement and also to the Loyalist movement. And he had the capacity in his personality to develop that trust between people who, before that, really wouldn't have engaged with Fianna Fáil leaders or indeed Taoiseach from the Republic.
A further question for you, just that capacity to build relationships. You would have been a young Cork South Central TD. You never served in cabinet with him, but when he was in high office, how do you recall him as a member of Leinster House? What was he like as a senior party figure when you would have been very junior?
A very warm personality, very accessible to TDs, no airs and graces, feet firmly on the ground. A very practical man from that perspective, and in some respects different maybe from previous generations in the sense that he was very, very accessible to backbenchers, and they found him very accessible, and a person you could talk very readily with. And there was no, I didn't get that sense of hierarchy with him. And I was struck, even as a young member of the party, his enthusiasm and his energy. I could never quite get over his capacity to stay up late at night drinking cups of tea when all around them were doing something else at party functions or whatever, and just entertaining people or meeting people who had different issues to discuss with him.
Now,
he had incredible energy, and you know, he did many functions across the country and would be travelling back home in the middle of the night, but he had that capacity really to engage with people and to facilitate them in coming to him. But also, I think we should also remember his broader legacy, and people in contemporary Ireland may not realize he really was the pioneer of the modernization of telecommunications in this country. At a time when to get a phone could take months, he revolutionized that situation and modernized our telecommunications structure, which was key to subsequent economic development.
And our complaints now about telecommunications would perhaps be paltry compared to those of yesteryear when he was active in politics. But Micheál Martin, we must leave it there. It's 25 minutes past eight.
And it's no harm to remember that this month, 20 years ago, people were being killed by both sides, not only in the north, but also on both sides of the Irish Sea. But one of the enduring images that reminded everyone, that showed everyone that we were moving to a different phase in Irish history, was when Albert Reynolds, as Taoiseach, stood outside government buildings with John Hume, the leader of the SDLP, and Gerry Adams, president of Sinn Féin. And I think at Albert Reynolds' instigation, the three men put their hands together to show us all, literally, in an image, as I forget, that was unforgettable, that times were changing. And one of those men is with us now, Gerry Adams, president of Sinn Féin. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think was his achievement is obvious in terms of the North and peace, but what do you think he brought to it in particular?
Well, first of all, I want to pay tribute to Kathleen and express sympathy to her and to her family and to Albert's family. She was hugely supportive, very, very loyal. And the last time I spoke to both of them, and I'm sorry I didn't get to see Albert more often since he was ill, the sense of love in that family was palpable. What he brought to the process was a straightforwardness, a down-to-earthness. He was also very welcoming. The ability to act when it mattered, I think, is what stands out. And clearly there were big differences and big gaps to be bridged, but the iconic image of himself and John Hume, and you know, we remember John Hume at this time, Martin Mansra working behind the scenes, but really the person who made the huge difference in there with Albert was Father Alex Reid. He first of all forged a personal relationship, developed that to bring loyalists in to talk to the Irish government at that time and to the Taoiseach at that time.
It was go on.
So I think if I was to remember anything, it would be just his down to earthness.
It was a long and difficult road for everyone concerned, and people were dying all the time before we got to that moment 20 years ago when the IRA declared a ceasefire. Do you remember when you first met him?
Yes, I met him at government buildings. I talked to him on the telephone before that.
When was that?
But the first time we met was a short period of an hour or so in advance of that photo opportunity where myself and John Hume and he met on the steps of government buildings.
It was as late as that. It was 1994, just shortly before the three of you appeared on the steps. That was your first meeting?
Yes, and one has to remember, you see, that Sinn Féin was practically a banned organisation. We were censored from the airwaves. We were treated like pariahs, and our electorate was treated in exactly the same way. The British government were very reluctant participants in the peace process at that time. So were many elements of the Irish establishment. And, you know, it's probably only possible when Albert Reynolds came in as a bit of an outsider and in the sort of the early days of his role as Taoiseach that he was able to turn some of that round.
Gerry Adams, thank you very much for talking to us.
And we're joined by the former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, Minister for Finance in Albert Reynolds' two brief coalition governments from 2002 to 2004. He, of course, subsequently took over from him as leader of Fianna Fáil. Bertie Ahern, of course, there was much interest at the time in whether or not you would go forward for the nomination as leader of Fianna Fáil after Charlie Haughey's left office.
Yeah, well, first of all, can I just join with others in extending my sympathies to Kathleen and to the seven children and the extended family. Kathleen was so important in Albert's life, and even though when she had ill health herself, she was so close to him and so helpful to him. And I know the family were, for Albert, the family always came first, and he was very close to the family, even though he gave a huge amount of his life to the politics, to business and the entertainment business. He I think, was a family man more than anything else. So I think our sympathies and heartfelt sympathies go to the family this morning. Yes, I was elected the same day as Albert in 77. We worked through politics together. We served in government together. I was in Charlie Haughey's government as Minister of Labour, Minister of Finance, when Albert was in communications, and when he was changing the whole face of communications in this country under the board that had been set up at that time by Michael Smurfit and all of the people who were involved in that. And then when he was leader in 92, I continued and was appointed by him as his Minister of Finance and continued in that role after the change of coalition government from the Progressive Democrats to the Labour government. And then I was with him right through the European negotiations and the famous structural funds round, and then into the peace process, which I continued on after his successful work. Particularly, I think you should say today, the Downing Street Declaration. I know from many conversations with Albert at the time, the Downing Street Declaration was really the forward to the whole ceasefire and the work afterwards that I continued on in. And I think the Downing Street Declaration, which was December 93, particularly want to mention that today.
When you left office, of course, everyone was saying that your great legacy would be, the striving for peace in Northern Ireland, that nascent peace that was emerging and continues to grow. What sort of role do you think Albert Reynolds had in the building blocks of that prior to your own direct involvement?
Well, I think the Downing Street Declaration, you see, if there hadn't have been a Downing Street Declaration, I don't think there would have been a ceasefire in the first place. Now, that did break down subsequently, but I think that was carefully crafted, and Albert put huge amount of energy and commitment into that, and we know it was helped by many people from both sides of the divide in the north, and no more so than Archbishop Eames, who helped Albert in the drafting of that and put in a huge input into that. And I know Albert was very conscious that if he got that right with John Major, that it could open up a lot of doors and build a lot of progress, which it did, because it was 8 months or 9 months, almost 20 years to the day now, the 30th of January 94, when the first ceasefire came about. So I think that work was really what allowed us to move things on and to try to work ultimately to get inter-party talks going in the north.
I'll go back to my original question for you, which was, after Charlie Haughey's left office, the challenge, if you like, for the leadership of Fianna Fáil, there was much speculation that you would challenge Albert Reynolds for that position, but you decided in the end not to. Why was that?
Well, I mean, just to keep the history of it right, I was never a candidate.
No, never a formal candidate, but there was considerable speculation.
There was considerable pressure on me to actually run, but I was only in the door in the Department of the Finance. I was following Albert in that job, and I was trying to get ready my first budget, which would have been the budget of 1992. I was only weeks in finance, so I was very honoured and long looked forward to a change from Labour and to get an opportunity to be Minister of Finance, which I wasn't three governments. I was so pleased with that, but also so challenged. It was of no sense to me to become embroiled in a leadership race, and so I was never a candidate, never wanted to be a candidate in it. I said at the time I would like to be a leader at a future date, but not a few weeks after I took over that.
And yet,
and I worked successfully with Albert, and following on in finance, he was very helpful, even though he'd left government at that stage, he was very helpful to me in that period. And then we continued to work into the whole European funding issue, which we, again, was a masterstroke in negotiations with the kind of resources we got on structural funds, cohesion funds, and social funds.
It does seem a relatively paltry sum now, given the amounts of money we routinely talk about in relation to the Irish economy, but he was known as the minister for some billions, whether it was 7 billion or 8 billion, money secured from Europe.
Yeah, well, and it was, well, I think it was the 8 billion figure was the one he used, and I think we got something like 7.94 because we used to laugh about it. But it was tremendous negotiations, and you know the context of that very briefly was that the old exchange rate mechanism had collapsed, and Norman Lamont's government, which brought down the whole European currency and the narrow band at the ERM, as it was known. And, you know, that hit Ireland very hard at the time. And we were anxious to try to get the development of the economy going. We had the start of the roads programme that time. And, you know, we were trying to get those kind of resources to try to get down unemployment, to generate activity. And, of course, you know, when Albert had two objectives when he was elected, Taoiseach, one was the peace in the north, the second was to revitalise the economy. And a key part of that was to achieve a big grant from Europe over that period so that we could stimulate the economy. And he, being a good businessman and a good tactician, and worked hard within the European system to get those kind of resources, which is what gave that great kickoff right through the 90s to the Irish economy.
We mentioned in our extended report on his life and times there about his candidacy for the presidency against Mary McAleese. How do you assess that period?
Well, Albert, I think, was reluctant to go in it. I did talk to him about it and thought it was a good idea for him to go to it. And a number of candidates came, I think four candidates came into the field. I think if he had been elected, he would have been a good president, but the party so decided to go with Mary McAleese, who I think became a good president. But I mean, I think Albert was happy enough to get on with his own life and his own interests. And well, if he had been elected, he would have been a good president. But in the case, he didn't get the nomination.
Some assessment that your support at the time was ambiguous for him. How do you feel about that?
Well, there were four candidates in the race, if I recall. I mean, there might have been even five, but I think there was at least four. And they were all close friends of mine, all people I knew. And, you know, I think it was clear to the party wanted to win the presidency. I think we would have won it probably with most of the candidates in the field. But, you know, the history, I think somebody said at one stage that maybe if I was stronger in the support, but at the time I think I was strong in support, but I think I was criticised for that at the time.
Bertie Ahern, former Taoiseach, thank you for joining us this morning. The time is 22 minutes to 8 o'clock, considerably later than normal. Brian Jennings is here with a summary of the news.
Thank you, Christopher. We're staying with that story. The former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds has died. He was 81. Born in Rooski in County Roscommon, Mr. Reynolds became a successful businessman and politician. He served as a minister in several government departments and was twice elected Taoiseach. He played an integral part in the early years of the Northern Ireland peace process. He died in the early hours of this morning following a long illness. Mr. Reynolds is survived by his wife Kathleen and seven children. The former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern said he was deeply saddened to hear of the death of Albert Reynolds. The Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin paid tribute to Mr. Reynolds' legacy of peacemaking.
That legacy of peace and the capacity to broker peace, I think, will be his enduring legacy, and in terms of contemporary Ireland, still obviously has ramifications to the present day.
In other news, the White House has said that US Special Forces launched a secret mission earlier this year to try to rescue American hostages held in Syria, including the journalist James Foley, who was killed by Islamic State militants. A Pentagon spokesman said the mission failed because the troops couldn't find Mr. Foley or others and pulled out of Syria after a gun battle with Islamic State fighters. In Britain, police and intelligence services are stepping up their efforts to identify the apparently British Islamist militant who carried out the killing. A video of the killing that was posted online has provoked outrage internationally. A Department of Foreign Affairs official has said that around 30 Irish citizens had gone to fight in Syria and Iraq. Now, the weather forecast, rain and drizzle in the west and north will spread southeastwards this morning and will become more widespread this afternoon. Brighter weather, but with a few showers, will follow from the north in the late afternoon and evening. Highest temperatures will range from 14 to 17 degrees.
Welcome back. You're listening to Morning Ireland on a special programme which we're devoting entirely, obviously, to the life and work of Albert Reynolds, former Taoiseach. And because of that, we're not going to bring you sports news for, I think, understandable reasons this morning.
But we can speak to another former Taoiseach. John Bruton is on the line. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Now, obviously, you were Taoiseach in the 90s as well. There was great sparring between Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, much coalition, much debate in politics about the shape of politics and how governments would be formed from here on in, and we have a legacy of coalition since. How do you assess the politics at the time when Albert Reynolds was working hardest in Dáil Éireann?
Well, it was quite constructive, really, because we did achieve a lot in that time. We laid a foundation for very rapid economic growth, and also we succeeded in resolving the conflict of allegiances in Northern Ireland. So I think politics worked. But before saying more about that, I'd like to say how very sad I am to learn that of Albert's death. We were obviously political rivals and of different parties, but he was always a kind man. He never said anything nasty to me and always was welcoming whenever I met him, as I did not too long ago. And I know how devoted he was to Kathleen and the family, and our thoughts must all go to them at this stage. Assessing his particular contribution, another former Taoiseach said a minute ago, the negotiation of the Downing Street Declaration was absolutely crucial. And that involved not just the SDLP, which usually was talking to the Irish government, but the unionist community were also brought along in the negotiation of the Downing Street Declaration. And that meant that it was a foundation upon which successive governments on both sides of the Channel could build to create the peace that we now enjoy.
In relation to relations with Downing Street at that time, Albert Reynolds would have obviously had a close involvement there. How difficult were they? How was Britain moving, if you like, that bit closer towards some level of amelioration in the North?
Well, in a sense, what we were trying to do was, on the one hand, persuade the Sinn Féin and the IRA that the use of violence was not going to achieve anything. And therefore, we had to create a framework where they could share power, if you like, in Northern Ireland with the unionist community, which involved winning the trust of the unionist community. And what the Downing Street Declaration did was create a structure in which that could be done. And that is, I think, an enduring legacy of Albert Reynolds. And I've always regarded that as very helpful to me in what I did in the peace process subsequently, and no doubt it was helpful to Bertie Ahern.
And yet Albert Reynolds once famously reportedly accused you of being John Unionist.
Well, look, I don't think that was a slip of the tongue. He probably thought it at the time, but I don't think he meant all that much harm by it. My concern always was to ensure that you had the unionist community on board as well, and that the unionist community would feel that they could trust Dublin as they could trust London. And indeed, if we were ever to have a united Ireland, you would have to get a situation where the unionists trusted Dublin more than they trusted London. We haven't achieved that, of course, and we probably won't, but we had to bring both sides along, otherwise there wouldn't be a process and there wouldn't have been a result. We now have power sharing operating in Northern Ireland, as it did under Sunningdale, but now on a basis where everybody accepts it, where some people didn't accept it at the time of Sunningdale.
One aspect of Albert Reynolds' tenure in office that we haven't discussed too much, but of course it directly led to your assuming office, was his political downfall, Brendan Smith, the Harry Whelehan affair. For those not familiar, can you just give us a reprise of what happened?
I'm afraid afraid I don't remember all the detail of that. Fundamentally, I think it was a breakdown in communications or trust between the two parties in the then government, Fianna Fáil and the Labour Party, over a variety of issues where they didn't feel that they were dealing fairly with one another, and the result of that was that the Labour Party decided that it couldn't continue in office with Fianna Fáil, but that they could form a government with the Democratic Left and Fine Gael, which they did. The detailed ins and outs of it are something that we'll write a book about sometime, but I don't remember.
His problems with yours and Fine Gael's opportunities. In some respects, he served a relatively short tenure as Taoiseach. Should he have served a longer period? In other words, things went badly wrong. But when he came to office, you had a sense in the country that this was a man who would be around for quite a considerable length of time.
That's right. I mean, within the Fianna Fáil, he bridged all the different factions within Fianna Fáil. He sort of was a representative of a range of opinion within the party, which is, I think, good. But look, he achieved an awful lot in the time that he was there. It's not the length of time you serve, but the contribution you make that's important.
John Bruton, former Fine Gael Taoiseach, former Taoiseach of the country, sorry, leader of Fine Gael, thank you very much for joining us. The time is 12 minutes to 9 o'clock.
And we're joined now by somebody who knew Albert Reynolds well as an observer of his life and his work, journalist and broadcaster Livy O'Leary. You're very welcome. He was a controversial figure, a very constructive figure, obviously, in relation to the Northern Ireland peace process. Somebody who served a very short time in government and played a fairly significant role in bringing about the collapse of two governments. So, in the round, how do you remember him?
Well, the very things that made him made it possible for him to bring about the truce were the things that in the end brought him down. Sometimes it's the right man in the right place, but he may only be there for a short time. He was unsentimental. He made deals. That's what he did as a businessman. And I remember talking to him after the ceasefire and asking him about it. And he said, one thing in business, he said, you keep your eye on the rabbit. And he kept saying this, you keep your eye on the rabbit. And he's right. He kept following the deal. Unlike Haughey, who may have been more conscious of pursuing his position as constitutional leader and the cause of constitutional nationalism, Albert wanted to stop the guns, and that was his absolute focus. And the wonderful thing about him, as you know, he was a garrulous man. He would talk forever. It was brilliant. He'd chat away to you on the phone. But in that period, he kept quiet, and not even his two coalition partners, first O'Malley and then Dick Spring, knew totally what was going on and that Martin Manser was talking to the Provisional IRA. But he was practical. He, for instance, Charlie Haughey'd had a terrible relationship with the President, Mary Robinson, on Haughey's side, that was. But Albert said, I remember talking to him, and he said, listen, you know, she's a good little pony. Let her off. Let her go to Northern Ireland and shake Gerry Adams' hands. Sure, I mean, what harm will that do? It's only for the good. But I remember the description of Mary Robinson as a pony will stick with me forever. He was stubborn. I mean, his refusal to withdraw the word dishonest in the whole...
This is what he said about Des O'Malley. His tarnisher from the Progressive Democrats.
Exactly, in the whole Beef Tribunal process. All he had to do was withdraw that word dishonest. But he wouldn't do it. And, you know...
And his government collapsed as a result.
And his government collapsed. And I remember sitting in the press gallery looking down the day before he actually resigned. He made a shambling speech. There were bits of paper everywhere. But it was the first time I had seen Albert not being cocky. Cocky was what Albert was. And suddenly he was shambling. And on the day he left, he looked up at us in the press gallery and he said, you jump all the big ones. It's the little ones that trip you up. But I remember my husband, who was an economist, was asked by every single Taoiseach at some stage to act as economic advisor to them. And he said no. He said the only one he would have done it for was Albert Reynolds, and Albert didn't ask him.
And his ability to make deals and to work towards them, obviously the Northern Ireland peace process, obviously outstandingly, but it stood him in good stead. He could break deals and smash them up as he did in large measure in two governments, but to make deals where it mattered in the party, in the country, in Europe?
Yes, absolutely in Europe. And, you know, 8 billion or as near as makes no difference was actually structural funds from Europe. He managed to do that. But, you know, on the other side of that, he was determined for us to track the Deutschmark. That was pure stubbornness. It made no sense for us to do that at all.
We're talking about a time we had our own Irish pound.
We had our own Irish pound. But, you know, mortgagees were finding they were paying interest rates of, what was it, 15, 16%. I mean, it was mad stuff. And Irish exporters were screaming. But because Albert wanted to show what a good European he was, and because he wanted to stay tracking the Deutschmark, he did it, even though the Germans were telling us to back off. And Bertie Ahern didn't want to do it, because I remember talking to him at the time. But Albert kept this up. But one memory I'll always have, Cathal, was of dancing with him at a charity do.
Tell us more.
He was brilliant. You suddenly remembered, you know, that Albert was the country and western king. And I think it was in the Shelburne, it was a charity do, and I got out on the floor to dance with Albert. He was the most wonderful dancer. Smooth, determined, and he danced all night. He wouldn't take a drink, but he danced all night. But he never forgot who he was. He never forgot that he started as a porter in a CIE station, I think it was in Ruski. You know, all of what he had been, the businessman, the country and western king, that all was brought in to how he conducted himself.
And he got into terrible trouble for saying at the Dáil, I think I know who it was, you might know, when he said, that's women for you.
Yeah.
Which is completely untypical of the man. He got on very well with women in his own family in general.
Well, he did. And it was Nora Owens that he was aiming this at for. And, you know, that was the sort of country background as well, that he didn't realise what trouble he was getting himself into. And he knew he'd made a terrible mistake, but he laughed it off. But yeah, that's who he was. You know, you got it on varnish.
Stay with us, because we're also joined by somebody who knew him from close in as an advisor, Dr. Martin Manzer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Looking back on the man, his style and his achievements, what do you make of Albert Reynolds?
Well, I think the achievement was huge. You wouldn't have got the rest of the peace process without a ceasefire. And I think, you know, one of the very courageous decisions he made was to open, or more precisely, reopen a back channel to the Republican movement. And indeed, a little later on, a line through to the loyalist military command. I mean, with all due respect, you know, no matter what his relationship with John Major, unless he had been able to convince the hard men on both sides that there was a better way, and that he could lead them towards that, then there wouldn't have been any ceasefires. And then the other thing, which I don't think has been mentioned so far on your program, I mean, he did, of course, form the first, but not necessarily the last, Fianna Fáil Labour coalition.
Fair to say that his work in bringing about the peace process and bringing about the IRA ceasefire 20 years ago this month was at times a lonely one, lonely to the extent that even his own cabinet weren't in on it.
Well, he knew he had to be extremely discreet, which didn't come naturally to him, because he was naturally a fairly garrulous person. He liked to be talking to his friends, but he was very careful what he said to others. There would have been, of course, some written communications which some civil servants would have been privy to, but he couldn't let on that there was a direct line of contact. But of course, without the direct line of contact, it would have been impossible to bring into place, because it was a question of building the necessary degree of trust, and that couldn't be done at a distance.
Briefly, why do you think somebody who achieved so much 20 years ago this month played a major role in the collapse, not of his first coalition government, but of his second, so that his career as Taoiseach only lasted 2.5 years? Why was that?
He was certainly very macho, but I mean, there are or have been other macho people in the Dáil. I also think that perhaps what he was doing wasn't fully appreciated, perhaps because of his his background. I mean, Conor Brady, who was editor of the Irish Times, has gone on the record and considers that the Irish Times was unfair to him. And I do think it was. I mean, if you'd asked me what was the major political tragedy of my life, and that would have been the collapse of the Fianna Fáil Labour government. While accepting that it may have been, more his fault than others, nonetheless, it shouldn't have been. It shouldn't have been allowed to happen. And it did contribute to sort of throwing the peace process off track. Oh,
I'm afraid we'll have to leave that very briefly, Olivia Leary.
Yeah, I mean, Martin has reflected that stubbornness. He was an extraordinary Taoiseach in terms of making a deal with the Labour Party. Do you remember the longest love letter in history when he made his presentation of conditions to them? They couldn't turn it down. But then in the end, he was just so stubborn. He couldn't stop himself time and again in his life because he was stubborn, wouldn't back down. He tripped himself up.
Olivia, thank you.
Yes, and thanks, Cathal. We've just had a statement in from the Taoiseach, Enda Kenny. We are talking about events of a generation ago. Albert Reynolds, says Enda Kenny, and he's talking about the period 88 to 91 when Albert Reynolds was Minister for Finance, brought an energy and drive to the development of business and economic growth during his tenure as both Minister for Industry and as Minister for Finance. And then moving forward a few years, the period 1992 to 94, when he was Taoiseach, he says he played an important part in bringing together different strands of political opinion in Northern Ireland, and as a consequence made an important contribution to the development of the peace process, which eventually led to the Good Friday Agreement, which we of course we live with the legacy of now. We can go briefly to our Midlands correspondent, Ciarán Mullooly. Albert Reynolds, of course, was a TD for Longford, Roscommon. Ciarán, good morning to you. You've been getting some reaction.
Yes, indeed, Christopher. Albert Reynolds will be quite rightly remembered for his legacy in terms of the peace process in the coming days. But this morning, it's his work and his tremendous work over the years as an employer in the Midlands that has been talked about most. Because people may not know that he had an extraordinary career in business before politics. He worked, he bought a bacon plant in the Dublin Liberties. He owned C&D Foods, obviously, in Longford. He had a cinema. He became a publisher of the Longford News. But it was with C&D Foods that he had perhaps the most impact on the most number of people in the region, because he employed over 1,000 people at one stage. In his autobiography, he refers in one chapter to the fact that getting into Sainsbury was the part that made him. To be able to sell an own label pet food to Sainsbury was critical. And he employed people from throughout the Midland region. He gave jobs when there were no jobs from 1971 onwards for 10 years. But of course, this morning, finally in Longford, politics is of course to the forefront. And the people who worked with him when he became firstly a TD and then a Taoiseach are talking about him. People like Peter Kelly, the Fianna Fáil TD who succeeded him, describes him this morning as the best Taoiseach of our times, the man who brought peace to Ireland. But finally, one of his great friends, one of the people who was with him throughout the way, Benny Reid, a Fianna Fáil activist down through the years, I spoke to him a few moments ago. He said this morning, history will be kind to Albert Reynolds, even if at some stages his own party was not. Just a little flashback there to some of the things that happened in the Fianna Fáil at the end of his career in politics. And Benny concluded by saying, Albert played a very honourable part in Irish life. He certainly was no coward.
Ciarán Mullooly, Midlands correspondent, thank you for that. It is 9 o'clock, and that was Ciarán reporting from Albert Reynolds' constituency, Heartland. We'll take a short break.
It's nearly 9 o'clock on RTE Radio 1. Time to check out Toyota, the most reliable car in Germany in a survey of 8 million cars. Toyota, the best built cars in the world.
We're sorry. Sorry for the car crashes, smashes and bashes. Sorry for the flooded living rooms, the floating sofas. Sorry for the bad actors, the crocodile tears, the overdramatic wails. We're sorry that so often fear is used to sell insurance. At 123.ie, we have decided enough is enough. We promise we won't use fear to sell. We don't need fear or shock tactics to sell our insurance, because we have excellent customer service, great value and exceptional policies. No fear, just insurance you can count on. 123.ie. 123 Money Limited, trading as 123.ie, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Welcome back. Our editors this morning, Cathy Farrell and Michael O'Kane. Richard McCullough was on sound. The broadcast coordinator was Claire Murray.
In the years before Albert Reynolds became Taoiseach in 1992, he was a frequent guest in the Morning Ireland studio. He lived nearby, which was a help, and he often answered awkward questions about controversies that had nothing to do with his ministerial brief. So we'll remember him for that. But of course, anyone who knew him, anyone who lives in this country, will remember him for many other reasons, both good and also some of them controversial. There'll be a lot to talk about on programmes throughout the day, beginning or continuing with Sean O'Rourke at 10 o'clock. But we remember Albert Reynolds on the morning that he died, and we remember the fact that we live on the peaceful island he did so much to create. That's more than enough.